Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 24, Taking It All In. Here we go. Today, our guest is Scott Lowe. How are you doing, Scott?
I am very well. Thank you for asking.
Hey, thanks for being on. And co-hosting with me is Doug Carson. How are you doing, Doug?
Hey, Rick. I'm great. Thanks.
All right. So I have the title, Taking It All In. And what I mean by that is we've all gone through a journey of expanding our technical expertise from, say maybe I started in servers and operating systems and now virtualization is rolled into my mix or something like that. I can't think of anybody better to really embrace the whole stack than Scott Lowe. So, Scott, can you give us a quick introduction? A lot of people know who you are. You don't really need much, but there might be someone who doesn't know. Let us know.
Well, absolutely, and thank you for the compliment. I don't know if I actually live up to that, but I will certainly do my best. So my name is Scott Lowe. I am an author. I have a few books on the market. I've been a blogger for quite a few years now, probably one of the oldest from in terms of when it first started in the virtualization space blogs out there. Along with some other graybeards like Mike Laverick.
Graybeards.
He'll get me for that one, but that's okay.
Nice.
That's fine. I enjoy being in the virtualization community. Enjoy talking about the technology. I have, as you mentioned, kind of branched into some other areas and still doing a lot of growth there. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Do currently work for EMC Corporation, but I try and keep all the stuff that I talk about as independent as possible when I'm out in the community, making sure that I support people and go from there. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome, awesome. And if you haven't heard, there's three main books that Scott has written. I believe the most recent one is the VMware vSphere Design with Mesh Sidel-Kissing, and I apologize, Mesh, if I've mispronounced that, as well as Forbes Guthrie. And I have that book, and I also have the book before that, Mastering VMware vSphere 4. And there's also another one out there, VMware vSphere 4 Administration Instant Reference with Matthew Johnson and Jace McCarty. So, this guy has a popular blog. He's writing all these books. He's active on Twitter, VMware Communities. How do you find the time for all that, man?
I have to give most of the credit to my wife, Crystal. She is absolutely the best partner that anybody could ask for. No offense to your own respective partners, but it is very, very demanding in terms of time to work a full-time day job, to try to support the community, to write books and publish blogs. And, a lot of times I feel like I don't adequately balance all of the things that I have to balance between, making sure I'm there for the kids and there for Crystal and helping her with her efforts around spousetivities and then, supporting my employer and making sure that I get good content on the blog and also meeting deadlines. It can be challenging. It's just, I think what it really boils down to is passion. And that is, I really enjoy the technology. I really enjoy learning. I would say that I have a lifelong love of learning. And so the opportunity to do new and different things, the opportunity to see how new technologies interact with existing technologies, it's what drives me. And then kind of tangential or closely related to that is that, I want to be able to explain those to other people. So when they say, I don't really understand how blah, 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 I can say, you need to link it to this and this and this, and then it becomes like that, and I can provide some analogies and metaphors, and it's really great to have somebody say, okay, now I get it. That's great. So I think that's kind of what drives me.
Reaching out to someone in person on the blogosphere, and when you both, or at least when you're helping someone, and they get that aha moment, that's very rewarding, would you say?
Yes,
I enjoy doing that. It's tough. These new medias. The Twitters and the Facebooks. I don't know if you're into that or the blogs of the world. You get people coming in, and you don't always have all the information, so you have to kind of assume different things. And there's a lot of different factors. Okay, so we might start with a virtualization question, but the answer might be storage, might be networking, might be operating system related. And Doug, you work on the whole stack as well, right? You're an integrator in the UK, so you deal with, everything up and down. So, you come to those aha moments as well. Is that right?
That's exactly it, yeah. And I think you mentioned it, Scott, passing on that information, the likes of yourself and various other guys like Duncan Epping and Michael Haverick, been able to simplify the subject, pass it on in an understandable and readable format. It just helps so many other people. But I think the impression I get using things like social media and Twitter and obviously comments on the blog posts is, for you, it must be better than in some ways than publishing a book, because you get that instant feedback, or you get that instant kind of response, so you can see whether or not you're doing things right or wrong, or whether or not somebody's picked that up properly.
I mean, you're absolutely right, Doug. I mean, it's a whole different ball game, you know, to write a book, because you spend months preparing all this content and you do the best you can to make sure the content is targeted at the right audience and as complete as possible and as clear as possible, and you have this whole team of editors behind you if you're publishing through a publisher, as I have. But you have to wait until it actually hits the market. And so there's this gamble, and you're always thinking to yourself, you know, okay, what if it really isn't very good? If I wrote a blog post and it's bad, well, you know, it's kind of like internet history. It'll be gone in a couple of days, no big deal. If I write a book and it's bad, then it's going to be out there for a while. So it is a very different thing than working with media that is a little more immediate. But, sure. You know, I think something that you mentioned, Rick, in terms of, you know, you mentioned in quote-unquote new media. The thing for me is that any form of media, whether it be writing somebody a letter, whether it be communicating face-to-face, whether it be posting on Twitter, it really all comes down to relationships and your character and how you interact with other people. And that's really what comes through. If you're the kind of person that just genuinely passionate about the technology and genuinely interested in helping others understand, then that becomes evident in your interactions with people, and people pick up on that respond.
I agree with that. Agree, because, you know, it's hard to how am I trying to say it? The people skill might almost be the biggest challenge, because you, first of all, can't control the interaction schedule, so, you know, we're all busy. We don't always have quote-unquote time to interact with the community, but if the passion is there, it's one of those things that you'll make time, you'll take the effort to understand, and hopefully, you know, deliver that aha moment to someone. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I definitely think as well, Rick, that people pick up on that enthusiasm and pick up on the passion you've got for it, and that kind of spreads, you know, definitely.
Awesome. So, you know, back to the core topic of what we're talking about. And, you know, Scott, you mentioned that you were one of the earliest virtualization bloggers. And, yeah, I'll agree with you. I mean, I started blogging in 2001, but not about virtualization. And, you know, you saw that, quote-unquote, small community when virtualization became, you know, in vogue, grow. And then after, you know, the novelty of virtualization was communicated, okay, everybody agrees that it's a good idea. Now we're starting to really sharpen our network skills, sharpen our storage skills, you know, refine the operating system practices to enable the virtualization to go well. And I know that, you know, both you and Doug, both in your consultancy roles, especially, you know, Scott, historically, you had to work with the whole stack. But now you really have to work with the whole stack, Scott. So tell me, Scott, if there's any type of coaching you can give to, you know, the administrator or the integrator that now has to work with servers, storage, networking, all those different technologies, what kind of coaching can you give to make that transition pretty easy?
I don't know that there's anything, and I'll qualify the statement afterwards so that I'm not a total downer, but I don't know that there's anything that can make the transition easier. If you have historically been – now, again, I'll qualify that, so okay. Just stay with me for a minute.
Okay.
If you have historically been a server guy, and by that I mean somebody who has primarily worked around the OS instance on a piece of hardware, you know, you were an admin and you managed Windows servers, and you were, you know, so you had your hands on the HP hardware or the IBM hardware or the Dell hardware, and you were installing Windows and you were patching it and all that kind of jazz. And now you find yourself in this brave new world where there is no real physical server you can go hug, right? There is, you know, some blade or rack mount server in the data center, and it's running ESX or ESXi, and you've got virtual instances, and now most of the stuff that you do is in vCenter server, and you find yourself now confronted with these other areas that you historically have not had to deal with in any great extent. It is going to be a challenge. But it's not an insurmountable challenge. Now, it is a challenge that requires us to take the skills that we've developed and apply our expertise and our intelligence to embrace some new terms, some new paradigms, some new ways of thinking. But those are all good. I mean, those are all things that are going to make us better in our quote unquote our core skill. And really, it's a necessary evolutionary step, because as the influence of virtualization spreads, even more so than it has now, and as these areas continue to blur, those people who don't make that investment, and it will be an investment in time and mental energy, will find themselves increasingly outdated, if you will. So the trick for me is, one, I try to cultivate an attitude of learning all the time, and that's easier said than done. But I mean, it's just a matter of, if you get the opportunity to learn something new or to consider something from a different perspective, take that opportunity. And then I find it always helpful to try to make direct connections back to what I do know. I kind of think of it as linking pieces together to build a more comprehensive body of knowledge. I mean, it's one thing to go out and say, okay, I'm going to learn technology Z, whatever that might be. Maybe it's you want to, you know, expand into the networking space, so you're going to start taking a closer look at, you know, NXOS on a Cisco device or JunOS from a Juniper device or whatever the case may be. That's all well and good, but for me personally, I find it most effective when I can take those things that I'm learning there, at least in the beginning, and make a direct connection association. When I do this, it is intended to help me in this area that I'm already familiar with. You know, if I I know that a recommendation from VMware is to disable spanning tree on a switch port, then that's an area where I can say, okay, I'm going to expand to the networking space and find out how that's done. And then I have that link back to something that I already know, so that it becomes relevant. It's not just an island of knowledge sitting out there, but it's connected back to the greater body of knowledge. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely, because I think that when you're evangelizing, you know, I don't even want to say a certain technology, it could be evangelizing, could be implementing, whatever. Whenever you're focused on one technology or more so a solution, you have to talk at least to the, if it's in a professional services arrangement, you have to talk to the customer. You may have to talk to all parties at once, because it's very frequent that the storage, networking, server, virtualization teams may all be separate. Okay, so when you're making a recommendation for the VMware guy to have the spanning tree disabled, for example, we may have to walk over to the networking guy and explain why. Okay, so really connecting the dots, if you will, across these, you know, four or five whatever categories of technology, it has to really flow well, meaning you have to have intelligent conversations with all of them. And to be able to do that, clearly you have to invest the time and effort in all those different technologies. And like you said, you know, situation A may be Cisco networking, situation B may be another brand. So it gets complicated. And now in the virtualization space, I mean, you know, VMware is primarily what I've been working on, but, you know, I might be working on Hyper-V a lot more, or storage brand A, storage brand B, or even product line A, product line B within, you know, a storage company. So the matrix, if you will, the Scott Lowe compatibility guide can really get complicated.
It can. Absolutely. There's no question about that. You know, I have I still, I'm always seeking to see where I can continue to expand my knowledge and make, you know, connections with individuals who have particular areas of expertise that I can gather information from them, you know, so making contacts within the networking space with people who are very, very skilled in that area and have had a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. That's always a benefit. Same in the storage space, same in the operating system space. So
I think you're right, Scott, saying that about having connections to try and help you fill those gaps, because it's amazing what you learn from maybe an hour's conversation with somebody, and they maybe just phrase it a slightly different way or put it in a, you know, break it down a slightly different way that makes you understand from where you're coming from, say the virtualization layer, to the networking stack. You think, oh, I know what you're meaning now, but you've got that thread of, as you said, maybe it might be just something simple as an STP, why disable STP or enable STP, but having that contact can be the difference between understanding it a lot further than not.
The one question I have, though, is, you know, I'm putting it back on myself. I'll admit I'm a Windows guy. I really need to put forth the time and effort to get up to speed on Linux. Okay, I can install Linux. That's made very easy now. Anybody can do that. But, you know, I can't troubleshoot. I can't install a database on it. Maybe I could find one that came with LAMP on it, and that would have a database. I don't know. But, you know, Scott, I guess for me, I'd identify that as an opportunity for me. Is there any learning opportunity, Scott, that you have that you want to tackle that you just haven't gotten around to do yet?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So some of my projected goals from a technical development perspective, I'm continuing to expand my networking knowledge. I had initially, this is a lofty goal and one that I'm going to aim for. But I'm shooting for CCIE.
Whoa,
at some point. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. I had initially said that I was going to do storage, CCIE storage, and then I was speaking with a gentleman who is an existing CCIE route and switch, and he said, you know, you really should do route and switch. And I said, well, you know, I understand that, but it's, you know, that's not really, that's kind of outside of what I traditionally do. And he said, you're right, it is that kind of outside, but that's what gives you the opportunity for growth. So it's kind of like you with Linux, you know, it would be one thing for you to say, hey, I'm going to learn, you know, something that is kind of related to Windows. You know, I'm going to become a SQL admin on Windows. Okay, but you've already got that kind of large overlap, right? As opposed to going in a very different direction and saying, okay, I already know Windows, but now I'm going to go over here to Linux, which is very different, yeah, and have to create an entirely new set of associations and a new set of analogies and a new set of metaphors and links back to my existing body of knowledge. But that's what gives you this tremendous opportunity for growth, because that gives you this broad base from which you can now begin to make associations and comparisons and see how these pieces are interrelated and yet different. I made that same kind of switch, Rick, some number of years ago, and actually it was spending a lot of time working in the Linux space that actually drove me to switch to the Mac platform, because it is Unix based underneath the GUI. And I found that I just once I mastered the concepts of what Unix and Linux are kind of all about, I felt more comfortable in that environment than I actually did in Windows. It was weird. Having been historically Windows guys, you know, MCSE and Windows NT 3.5.1 and then NT 4.0 and, you know, Windows 95 beta tester and, you know, all that kind of jazz. I even have a Microsoft certified professional dating all the way back to Windows 3.1 and DOS.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thanks.
So, you know, that's kind of crazy. But, so my technical goal, long answer, wrap it up here, is to expand my routing and switching knowledge and eventually tackle CCIE for route and switch.
Dude, that would be wicked. You would be, I think, the most certified person on the planet.
Yeah. There's actually, I don't know if I recall correctly, there's actually already somebody who was close to being both CCIE and VCDX, Jason Nash.
Wow.
I believe he's VCDX 49, and I believe he's already done a CCIE written. but hasn't done his lab test. So he's a lot closer than I am.
Wow. Okay. Well, you will join very, very select company on this this planet, I guess. Whatever. Awesome. Well, hey, Scott, I've got a little gimmick in my podcast, and I call it Three Views from You, and I want to ask you three questions, kind of focused in different points in time. And for example, now, the past, and the future. So let's start with the past. And Scott, as a technologist, what's the most interesting technical role, story, or something you were doing technology-wise in your past that you could share with us in the form of a good story?
That's a difficult one to answer, to be honest, because as somebody who's been in the technology field for 17 years now, I guess, you run into all kinds of projects, mm-hmm. and you do all kinds of interesting things, and at different points in your career, they seem like they are tremendous growth opportunities because they are areas where you'd never done that before, and then you look back on it now and you're like, oh yeah, that's a piece of cake. Sure. Because having made that initial stretch, now it's no longer a stretch for you. So I'll share a story that I thought was cool at the time. I don't know whether I would still classify it as cool, but it was a big stretch for me. It was something that I hadn't done a lot of. And this was, it was quite a number of years ago, but I was helping a customer migrate from one Active Directory structure into an entirely different Active Directory structure. And they were restructuring, going from being an independent organization to an operating company as part of a larger holding company. And they were joining the ranks of a number of other operating companies. And so there was this very complex Active Directory structure that Microsoft Consulting Services had come in and designed with the company's lead architect. And I was being brought along just as, somebody to help, make it work, afterwards. And, the reason I found that particular piece fascinating was it forced me to do some scripting and command line stuff that I hadn't done before. With regards to Active Directory, and so I after having done the project and looking back on it now, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, that's old hat. But at the time, I was being introduced to some DOS command line tricks that I didn't know, and leveraging the opportunity at that point to bring some stuff that I had experimented with on the Unix and Linux side into the Windows world. And kind of melding these different tools together in this interesting fusion of Windows and DOS and Unix and Linux to create this series of scripts and procedures that would, extract counts from one directory, manipulate all the data to do certain things like, switch first name and last name. And, so it wasn't first name, last name. It was last name, comma, first name, and mm-hmm. tag an operating company on the end and change their username to some weird ID that they were generating. It wasn't, any human recognizable thing. It was like an internal company ID or something. And then take all that data and spit it into the new system, and to have these regular updates so that as things change in the old, they would flow over into the new and so on and so forth. And it was an interesting project at the time. It ran for about a year and a half or something like that. And, so that was cool.
Well, what's funny is that work is actually still tough. There's tools that make it easier, but the other half of that is that was probably at a time where we didn't have virtualization. Now, the solution I would do is to take a virtual DC and move it off to a fenced off area, refine the script, and then take it to production with confidence, or refine the tool to take it to production with confidence. Because back then, before virtualization, that's one technology that could really make the test bed part of that a lot easier. That was probably a fun learning opportunity. That's really cool.
Yeah, this particular customer did have some virtualization at the time, and we actually did use a virtual DC and a whole other lab structure that they cloned off the original to do all of our testing before we actually ran those scripts in. So you're actually very, very close to what we did. We did leverage virtualization. They just weren't as fully virtualized as perhaps they would be now.
How about, today? What gives you the most passion in your technology for everything that's going on in your plate right now?
I don't know if there's any one that is really the most, you know, kind of interesting for me. I have been spending a lot of time, I'll do my best not to turn this into any sort of, you know, vendor commercial, but
no problem.
I have been spending a lot of time working with EMC's VPlex product, and that's a very interesting product to me in terms of what it can do and the kind of opportunities or solutions that you can build with it. But it's, for me, the current thing right now is just continuing to solidify and expand the information that I have. So, you know, I want to make sure that I'm keeping pace with the development of FCOE, for example, and how things stand there, and you know, staying abreast of storage development and keeping up with VMware's pace of innovation. That is really what's driving me more so than perhaps any one particular product. I don't do as many customer-facing implementation projects now as I used to in the past, because I am primarily more pre-sales and internal of a focus rather than a post-sales implementation.
Sure.
So, you know, don't get my hands on quite as much as perhaps I did in the past. But still, you know, I enjoy keeping up with the technology and helping make sure that customers are educated on it and know how to use it to accomplish what they're seeking to accomplish.
Well, I think you're plenty hands-on, but you're just not hands-on in, you know, the historical sense, you know, direct for client matters or something like that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So, and that's totally fine, because the rate at which those product lines in VMware are moving, whoa, look out. I can't even keep up, that's for sure. But, you know, let's suppose, you know, we're a couple years into the future. What does the future look like most interesting or technology-wise to you? What do you see as one or more things that'll really garner your interest and passion into the future?
So I think that there are three kind of pillars of what the future is going to look like from my perspective. And they are, they are different technology areas. So there are areas today where we would traditionally have different experts, if you will, in those areas. So if we look at networking and where networking is going, there are specific technologies and then broader standards-based efforts around decoupling the use of an IP address from its purpose as an identifier. You know, we use the IP address to identify a node on the network, right? But decoupling that from the decisions made to, or the decisions that are necessary to route traffic through the network. You know, right now we say IP address 192.168.1 .100 is both an identifier as well as a routing decision point. You know, how do I get to this address? I look at it and that's how I make my routing decision. So we look at stuff like Lisp and others. I know Greg Farrow, aka, you know, Ethereal Mind, has pointed out there are some other technologies. So Lisp is not a gimme, but there are other technologies along the same lines that seek to say that an IP address is not just an identifier, but or that an IP address is strictly an identifier and that there are separate information we'll use to make routing decisions. And I suspect some of that's going to get rolled into IPv6 with this extra address space. It would kind of make sense for us to do that. But I'm not an expert, so there you go. But that, I think, is going to make some interesting things possible, because right now when we start talking about, you know, relocating workloads, we have to worry about stretched layer 2 domains and kind of all these extra considerations. But if we were able to kind of imagine what things would be like if I could move a machine and maintain its IP address, but have the network understand that now that IP address is in a different location and I make routing decisions accordingly, I think that's a very interesting kind of scenario. You know, it opens up lots of possibilities for how customers could relocate workloads within their own data centers or even out to partner or provider data centers, without having to worry about, you know, layer 2 tunnels and you know, horseshoe routing and all these other kind of weird things that are kind of enforced by the fact that TCP/IP works the way it is. So I think the next couple of years in that particular space is going to be very interesting. And so in the future, it'll be nice to see how that kind of stuff is going to work. Same with storage, the ability to kind of relocate storage on demand, so enhanced replication and mirroring and these kinds of technologies, lots of interesting development going on in this space, and it'll be interesting to see how that continues to play out. And then VMware's continued march towards this idea of cloud computing, which, you know, I've always kind of described as more of an operational model than necessarily a specific technology, but that march towards workloads being ever more mobile and ever more agile, coupled with, you know, changes in how we approach storage, whether it be, you know, less the use of RAID and more the use of multiple copies of the data and making sure that policies enforce that, you know, there's always a copy available somewhere, something along those lines, then I think it's going to be interesting in the next couple of years. And so those three areas are where I'm kind of tracking things, and it's going to be interesting to see in a couple of years what sort of developments have happened there and how things have changed.
I just had a big aha moment.
Yep.
Basically, especially the network, I don't want to say the routing, you know, this next generation routing, how cool would that be? Why burden the application, the operating system, the user connectivity experience? Just make the routing smart. Interesting. Awesome.
Well, especially when you said I had an aha moment, Rick. I had the similar as well when Scott was talking about, as you say, why not move the workload to another data center and not really have to worry about routing and all the rest of it? And when he's talked about that, ideas started to come in my mind about stuff like long distance vMotions and all that kind of stuff. So really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be made easier in the future. So I encourage everyone to listen to what Scott has said like 3 or 4 times to let it set in, because this is another one of those guests that live in the future. This is awesome. Well, we're going to wrap up now. So, hey guys, I really thank you both for being on. And everyone can follow Scott on Twitter at Scott_Low, and that's Scott with 2 T's. And you can find his world-class blog of everything, storage, networking, virtualization, stuff, everything, at blog.scottlow.org. And Doug is on Twitter at Douglas_Carson. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
And thank you again, Doug, as well, for being on.
Thanks, Rick. Cheers.
If everyone has any questions on the podcast, you can send an email to podcast@veeam.com or find me on Twitter at Rick Vanover. That's a wrap.